Hello, my name is Dave Fairey. This is Type Radio from New York. Now we're talking.
It sort of brings me to another thing, that this thin line between revival and plagiarism.
Sure.
Which is, like, is that in the naming or the labeling?
Yeah, that's a good point. Matthew Carter, again, had a great line. He said that if you revive a typeface, what you're doing is you're bringing it to a new audience. And it doesn't quite totally justify it. I think there's then legitimate or illegitimate. I mean, the source of, I think Ed Benguet said something as well. He said something like, you can revive a face as long as the designer is dead, you know, which is fair. But also I think that the revivals are legitimate if, for example, it's the use of the face. So if you see a typeface and it looks beautiful in a book from the 1920s or 1930s or whatever it may be, and that face doesn't exist now because it's fallen down a crack, or, you know, it was a privately owned face or whatever it may be. I do a lot of research on these things at a place called St. Bride Printing Library in London. Mm-hmm. Extremely helpful, you know. And, you know, if you look at it and you can explore it, I suppose this is why I say I'm a letter repairer as well, because it's all theft in a way. You know, if anyone says I'm a typeface designer, you say, well, show me an original typeface, and they'll show you their typeface. You go, that's not original, because it isn't. It's all moving on.
Well, Matthew Carter said it. His definition of a revival, mm-hmm. I have the exact words. A revival is a typeface created in a previous technology and reinterpreted for modern contemporary requirements.
Yeah, it's better than I said it. I knew it was something
like
that.
You said the same thing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, I don't only believe that, I think that it's literally true. I mean, I've seen revivals Miller is a perfect example of Matthews. You know, you could turn around and say it's plagiarism, but it's about commerce. It's added to the world. You know, it's an extremely legible typeface, very successful, and it fits into our not our period, but it's 21st century. Yep. So it works.
Okay. Oh yes. Yeah. We found this picture here.
Are you left-handed?
I am left-handed.
Does it make a difference?
Yes.
In what way?
I actually don't have the sort of crooked, you know, Quasimodo style of left-handers. You asked a question earlier, I forgot all about it. How did I get interested in typography? I didn't get interested in typography, the letter forms. When I was at school, the only thing that I ever did was able to write neatly. But I was writing with an italic pen that was for a right-hander, because there's a left-hand, I didn't know that. But my writing was still good enough, writing with the wrong pen. So I just liked that aspect of it. And also, it's rather like tennis players, golf players. The percentage of left-handers in the world is probably about 10%. In the Western world, it's 10%. In, let's call it, third world countries, much less. You know, in Arab countries, for example, I don't know how many, but hardly any are left-handed. China and so on. It's a culture thing. But in our society, it says 10%. But the proportion of successful tennis players, golfers, and it's about 50% left-handed.
Oh, good. Okay, that's great.
Explain that.
There's that small shop in London, the left-handed.
Yeah, it's rubbish. Don't bother. When you're left-handed, you learn literally to do everything to accommodate the right-handed way. My wife knows when I've been in the kitchen. That's the only thing she'll say, because I put things back wrong, you know, because I put it back left-handed.
Right. But, for example, do you find it useful, those left-handed, you can order the left-handed checkbooks?
They don't have them, but you find, I mean, in other words, I'd feel strange now if it was the other way around, if all of a sudden there was a rush on the market of left-handed things. Because I got used to doing it, you know, mm-hmm. you accommodate things.
Yeah. Yeah, but you can order the checkbooks, right?
You at one time in the UK you could. I don't think you can now. I'll try again.
Yeah.
But I'm just used to it, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, there's this thing about writing. People say, oh, you're covering up what you're writing, you know, as you're doing this. You've got pushing that way. But it's the reverse is true, sort of how can I put it? Not, it's not ironic, but Arabs write the other way around. They push, as we would say. When you write right-handed, you pull. When I'm writing left-handed, I'm pushing. Yeah. So, but Arab, and they say that's wrong. That seems, you know, doesn't, but it does work, obviously. But when Arabs are writing, they're writing with their right hand and they're pushing that way. So it's contradictory. Mm. You know, so you accommodate everything, really.
Yeah, so, okay. Yeah, it's if they were left-handed, then it would be, it's the same thing.
I think, again, the number of people in graphics, number of lettering, it's a bit like the tennis thing. I think there's a higher proportion of left-handed people in this who can draw letters and got that sort of, ability. And there's a lot of, I haven't researched it in any particular way, but there is this thing, left brain, right brain, and coordination, eye to hand, you know. So it works for me anyway.
One last question. In what way were you involved in Compacta?
Well, again, I was again very, very lucky. That was one of the first. I joined Lettre in '61. I was 16. Compacta was, well, Lettre's story was this: that initially, for the first couple of years, they pirated faces. You know, they had to. Well, they didn't have to, but they did.
One cheap, by the way.
Yeah, well, what it was, I think it was they didn't even know about licenses and things like that. And then the larger companies came along and knocked on their door and said, do you know that's our typeface? And immediately they said, oh, we didn't know about that. We're sorry. We'll pay you. And they did. And once they were legitimate, they were very strong on being legitimate. And so everything was licensed and they paid royalties and everything else. Well, that went on. The company grew very quickly within a couple of years because the product was immediately successful, and designers or graphic designers wanted, you know, a variety of typefaces. But very quickly, you know, there was this sort of demand, and transfer was there was an expression used. It sounds a little bit like a marketing expression. It was called Lettreset. Was called the liberated letter. It meant that you could. You rub a letter down and then place any other letter next to it as close or as far away as you wanted. So as you control the spacing. And before that, there was only two other, well, there was still two ways at the time. It was either you had it metal set, you know, and you got what was set in typefaces that were just there, or you had a lettering artist do it. But the compacted story was that there was a consultant to Lettreset who was a tutor at the London School of Printing called Fred Lambert. And Fred had said to Lettreset, he said, look, you've got to, you know, there was two reasons. One is that he felt that the style of typography was changing and it wasn't just all these old faces from the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. If you've got to remember in Europe, after the war, the Second World War, it took a long time for industry to get going again. You know, it wasn't until the 60s, really, that there was, you know, the means of production, because that's what it was with metal, to actually make new typefaces. Anyway, Fred had done some drawings of a face that he felt would sell, and Lettreset believed in it. But to be honest, his artwork was awful. It was poor. But the actual, it's a bit like I've heard subsequently, like Herb Lubalin, his artwork was poor, so he had to have people to interpret. So I was very lucky because I actually interpreted Compacta, and I created the artworks, the original artworks. And we did, we didn't make really real modifications, but some of them were sort of, we did. Fred's ampersand, his ampersand was like a figure eight ampersand, as I call it. And we were very brave. We went continental. We made it like the French E.T.
yeah.
So that's mine, but...
Well, very nice E.T., though. Very nice ampersand.
Yeah.
I always want, because I've used it quite a lot, because it sort of represents pop culture in a way.
It does.
It was close to each other.
Well, both the product and Compacta, mm-hmm. that came out in '63, was that, I mean, 63, Beatles, you know, everything, all that stuff. And also it was this, what they call the post-war boom, you know. It was the first generation that had grown up after the war, early 60s, you know, from that. And yeah, it sort of but all of the Letraset shit, I mean, they chose faces that were given not just a second lease of life, but they actually had a bigger lease of life the second time around. Faces like Cooper Black was tremendously popular in the 60s. And there's a face called Egyptienne. Again, unbelievably, you know, and Compactor, you know. But I was at various stages responsible for a few years on. I was a studio manager, and I was responsible for choosing the ranges of faces.
So why is there such a big difference between the bold weight and the black weight?
Well,
why is there nothing in between?
Right. Well, there could be. It was probably by... What happened was we just did Compact on its own. That's it, one weight. And it was so popular that people started clamouring for a lighter weight and even a heavier weight. So a few years on, that's what we did. Can't remember the years now. It wasn't until the mid-70s, I'd left by then, that they decided, or I think it was by demand, you know. It wasn't anything like as successful as Compactor. It sort of had the Compactor shape, so the exterior, if you take the O, so it had the same cornering, mm-hmm. and so on. It was just made wider. But I think it was a bit like a lot of things. They thought if they gave it the Compactor name, it would be successful, you know. But Compactor is such a great word for a typeface of that kind. That's it.
Because it's actually...
You can't have a Compactor fat, can you?
Right. There's one anecdote we want you to tell us. It's the hotel, the Intercontinental Hotel, the ashtray story.
Oh,
yeah, we thought it was really a good story.
Well, I'm known for stealing ashtrays. I mean, but I don't. I borrow them because they're not on
you
tables.
You cheat, you lie.
I do, don't I?
You steal. This is it.
That's right. I do. That's why I'm not a Catholic anymore.
Yeah. It's a good thing that John Downer is not sitting here with us.
We'd be in trouble.
He's quite opposed to all that.
No, I mean, actually, I don't get challenged to do it. I mean, it's easy enough to do. But Eileen Strisba reminded me the other day. She said, "I remember that ashtray you stole in Paris." That was just great. I can't remember the year, but it was maybe 10 or more years ago. It was here in New York, and with Richard and myself and whatever, we'd just come off doing a corporate identity face for the Intercontinental Hotels. And the Intercontinental Hotels, I don't know if you've ever stayed in one. Have you? Wow.
No,
I couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
That's the point. They're very expensive, I think. I mean, you just press your nose up against the glass. That's my feeling on it anyway. And I was quite impressed that we'd done this. And I came to New York, and almost the first place I walked past was an Intercontinental there. And I went in, and I could afford a drink at the bar. And of course, these ashtrays had beautiful, proper China ashtrays, you know. And they had Intercontinental, our logo, you know, on there. And of course, as you know what it's like with anyone who doesn't understand our business, you know, the barman saw me just staring at the ashtray. Saying, okay.
Usually you stare at your drink, but now you're staring at an ashtray.
I don't know if I stole it. I think I might have been given it, or it certainly came into my possession. Let's put it like this.
And you still have it?
Of course, it's my. It's in. I still have it. Unfortunately, I know where it is, and it's just about there. It's almost faded, but it's. You can just about see Intercontinental on it still. But I've never gone back to steal another one.
But have you stolen an ashtray? During your visit here?
No.
At this time? No.
No. In fact, I probably bought it. I did bring an ashtray with me because I've got a smoking room, but so I might leave an ashtray behind this time.
Okay, so smoking rooms are...
On the 18th floor, the highest.
Are they still allowed?
I'm surprised. When I phoned, I booked the room initially on the Roosevelt site, but then I thought, I'd ring up, and I did, and they... I said, "Do you have smoke?" "Yes, yes, we do." So that was fine. And I understand it's no different from any other room. It's not a pokey room, you know. But it is on the top floor, and there's a chimney.
Well, I guess pretty soon they'll have the smokers taking a cab outside of town.
Yep. Yeah. People have asked me here, what's it like in London? And I think smokers are certainly more courteous, and you know, I mean, I won't smoke in a restaurant anyway in London.
Yeah.
You know. And so people do, if you want to smoke, and you get used to it. It's being courteous to other people.
I agree, but I find it's very strange when I see people just hanging around in the front of a hotel or mm-hmm. outside an office building smoking. It looks like they're
very
furtive.
Yeah. It is, of course it is. Yeah, I think it's a juggle between, you know, what they gain out of the... I don't know what you do here, but in England... they earn enormously. The tax on cigarettes is like 9/10.
In Holland as well.
Exactly. So, you know, it's a juggling act, isn't it, as they say. But, I mean, you accommodate. I mean, you travel on a plane or you go on a train. I mean, there's no smoking on any transportation in England at all. That's fine. So you can go all day without a cigarette. I mean, and you're not desperate. You just... That's the system. That's what it is. So you can... So.
Well, thanks a lot.
That's okay. Enjoy
it. Thank you.
Typeradio.org.